This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome. Welcome. So excited to have you joining the show today, listening in. I'm Phyllis Smith. This is Close Up. You know, Albert Einstein once said, anyone who has never made a mistake has never tried anything new. So, as you know, entrepreneurs are notorious risk takers, and with that comes mistakes. After all, that's how we learn and grow. And that's how we grow our business, and that's how we grow personally. But some mistakes can be prevented, particularly, and should be, particularly when it comes to finance. An area, if not managed well, could hurt you big time, right in the heart of your business, and that is your wallet. So my guest today knows a thing or two about business, and if you have ever owned a Franklin planner, you will know a thing or two about him. It's Hiram W. Smith. He's the inventor of the Franklin Planner and former CEO of Franklin Covey, among other things. He is directly responsible for training, get this, over 6 million people over the course of his career in time management. He's an author. He's written and co-authored numerous books, the most recent, The Power of Perception, which is a book more about personal transformation than time management, although he teaches you how to understand why you act and react the way you do, and then how to create positive change, because after all, knowledge is power. The more we know about ourselves, the more easily we could make change. So please welcome renowned author, international speaker, entrepreneur, extraordinaire, and all-around great guy, Hiram W. Smith.
Hey, how you doing, Phyllis? Thanks for that introduction. I thought, oh, my gosh, he's talking about me?
I was going to say, I know. Yes, I am. And I have to tell you, like, I'm a little nervous because you're like a big kahuna out there in the world of business and entrepreneurship and leadership. And so I'm so honored and so thankful that you were sparing some time today to be on the show.
Hey, I'm delighted to do it. It's just good to talk to you again. It's been too long since we visited.
Yes, I know. So, well, you know, I'm guessing that in the course of your career, you've made a few mistakes. And I'm just curious, specifically relating to financial blunders. Have you, is there any like one big one that was really a doozy for you?
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So is it, I feel like I'm in confessional now. I got to confess my sins here. Yeah, I don't think there's any. I think your point is very valid. Anybody in business who hasn't made mistakes, and particularly have made mistakes in the area of finance, you know, both personally and, you know, in the corporate arena. Generally speaking, I found, you know, people who tend to manage their personal finances well tend to also manage their businesses well. You know, I mean, they tend to make, you know, fewer mistakes. I mean, you know, you wish, you think that the country would understand the basic principle that it's really not a good idea to spend more than you earn. You know, I mean, that's a very un-American idea, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, if we ran our personal finances and our company finances the way we tend to run our country, We'd be out of business. They'd throw us out. I mean, it's not sustainable. You can't do that. So at some point, if you don't bring your expenses in line with what your revenue is, then it's not rocket science. You are doomed to fail.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one of the natural laws of the universe.
I think when it comes to being an entrepreneur, so often entrepreneurs become that way because, say, they're really passionate about something. They're very creative. Maybe it's about that they love baking cakes or whatever it might be. It's a dream come true. But they're not necessarily thinking it through in terms of how to manage the business from a financial level. And would you say that you got to get it it right from the get-go? I mean, when you go into business, what would you say would be the absolute first thing someone might need to do to set themselves up on the right foot when it comes to their finances?
Well, number one is that they've got to adopt some basic fundamental principles in their lives around financial management. You know, one clearly we've already talked about, it's not a good idea to spend more than you earn. And if you're going to spend more than you earn, then you'd better be pretty darn sure that what you're spending is going to increase the top line at some point. And so the issue is, well, how do I know that? You know, fact is, you know, most entrepreneurs, when they start, they do have a passion. I mean, when we started Franklin, you know, we had a passion. We really believed that we could help people get better control of their lives. That was our whole life. We really believed we can do that. And how did we do that? Well, we created a little seminar. It was a personal management seminar. We called it Time Management because if we called it life management, nobody would go. I had a lot of people tell me over the years, you know, this is not time management, this is life management. Mm. Why don't you admit that? I said, well, you know, it really is life management, but if we called it life management, nobody'd go. So our Trojan horse is time management because it's kind of okay, that's kind of cool to go to a time management course. You know, if you go to a life management course, you have to admit, well, maybe I'm not managing my life very well. You know,
uh-huh.
And nobody
yeah.
wants to admit that. But yeah. You know, when it comes down to managing the finances, you know, we've got to be good at that right from the beginning. And I'll tell you an interesting, sobering statistic, and that is that generally speaking, the entrepreneur that starts a company and takes it from the garage or the basement to $2 or $3 million in revenue, that's not the person that ends up taking it to $50 or $60 million in revenue and to a public company.
Ah.
And the reason for that is that the skill set required in scaling a company from an idea to actual revenue to actual sustainable growth, the skill set is really different. And you know, one of the things I had to recognize really early in my career as the starter of Franklin was that, you know, there are a lot of stuff I don't know anything about. And one of them I had to admit right up front is, you know what, I hate financial statements. I don't like to look at financial statements. When I look at a financial statement, my brain freezes. And, you know, all those numbers there. And, you know, I learned to go to the bottom right-hand corner of a financial statement with lightning speed because generally speaking, in the bottom right-hand of your financial statement is whether or not you got any money, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so one of the things that I discovered, and this is just the magic, I was fortunate in starting a company in my garage that doubled in revenue every year for 8 years. We got to $60 million in revenue, and then all of a sudden we reached $120 million in revenue. But interestingly, I admitted to myself, you know what, I got to have finance people in here that know how to read a financial statement, that they can tell me, and I got to be able to trust it, that whether I'm okay financially or not. And so I surrounded myself with people that really understood financial statements. And I will tell you, these people are not risk takers. You know, they don't like spending more than they earn. And you can get in some real arguments with those people, but you know what? If you don't have those people around you, you're going to be in trouble. And I'll never forget when we had done $60 million in revenue. My new CFO, I had brought him in, pretty bright guy. He came in to me and he said, "You know, Hiram, I have some good news and some bad news." And I said, "Really? Well, what's the good news?" He said, "Well, you've doubled in revenue every year for the last 8 years, and I really think you can do it again. I think we'll do $120 million in revenue next year." And I said, "Well, what could possibly be the bad news?" and then he said, "Hiram, we have to do $120 million in revenue next year." And I said, "Oh." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "You're spending money like a drunken sailor. And if you don't do $120 million next year, you're going to be in deep trouble. Well, I started to learn more about financial statements at that point. And, you know, and then we went public. We became a public company. That's a very exciting, heady thing. You don't go public unless you have 3 years of financial history that shows Wall Street and the potential buyers of your stock that you know what the heck you're doing from a fiscal management standpoint. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I mean, they've got to see 3 years of growth, not only in the top line, but in the bottom line, so that you have to demonstrate to the world before you ever think about going public that you know how to manage the bottom line. You know how to manage your financial side of your company. So it's really interesting. If you look at the history of most companies, you know, I mean, you look at the Dow brothers that started Dow Chemical up in Midland, Michigan. It wasn't long after they started that company. I mean, they went up there and they started their company. And they just happened to be in the biggest brine field in the world. And they started doing, you know, pulling the brine out of the earth, salt, their first thing. But it didn't take them long to realize, holy cow, you know, if we're going to survive, you know, we need to have people that know how to help us manage this thing. And so if I could give any advice, if you are the entrepreneur and you want to be around long enough to see your company go public, you better surround yourself with people that understand how to read a financial statement and what it means and where the money's going and why it's going where it's going. And because if you can't answer those questions well, you'll end up firing yourself. Or the clients will fire you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They'll say, you know what? You were great. You brought us out of the basement, but you haven't got the foggiest idea what you're doing now. So let's get somebody in here.
Would you recommend the next tier comes in. Yeah. Would you recommend that for really anybody just even starting out in a business, that if that's not your thing, have somebody whose thing it is and that could just keep you in line?
Absolutely. You know, in fact, that's why we created, right out of the box, we created what we called then an advisory board. And that advisory board grew into a real board, okay, because clearly when you become a serious company, you better have a board of directors. And the only thing a board of directors does, I mean, really, the one responsibility that a board of directors has is to hire and fire a CEO. That's really all the board does. And so the board better have people on it that knows how to read a financial statement.
Yeah.
And the board has to determine, does the CEO have the foggiest idea of how to manage the company fiscally? Okay? And that's why boards fire and hire CEOs. So if you're starting in your basement and you don't think about finance, then, you know, you have a board of directors and call them whatever you want. You know, I encourage people to have their own personal board of directors, you know, 5 or 6 people whose judgment they respect, and you meet with them twice a year and just say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I want to accomplish. Coach me. Tell me if I'm on the right track or not. And you can get a finance. There are a lot of people out there that understand finances, but if you can get them to believe in your idea, I don't care if it's bicycle tires or widgets or hamburgers. You know, there's a woman that started a company in California that makes cupcakes. And this thing is unbelievable. I mean, they charge $6 for a cupcake and people line up to buy them, you know? And who would do that?
Well, it's like somebody decided one day that they're going to charge $4 or $5 for a cup of coffee. Somebody thought of that, right?
Yeah, who would ever do that? I mean, 20 years ago, if you said that, told the average person on their way into Manhattan, you know, would you like to buy a cup of coffee for $6? And they would say, are you kidding? Nobody's going to do that. Well, people do that every day, and they line up to do it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there was an idea that, you know, came at the right time, but Starbucks really knows how to manage the bottom line. I mean, they've discovered the magic of spending less than they earn. So, you know, I, right out of the box, absolutely. I'd have somebody coaching me that knows how to read a financial statement. And I'll be honest with you, you know, I had, right from the beginning, I had somebody there with me, and I just say, hey, are we solvent or not? And all I needed to hear was, we're solvent, and then I'd go do my thing, you know.
Yeah.
because I was really good at driving the top line. I mean,
yeah.
I taught seminars, and the only way people could get a Franklin planner in the early days, they had to go to a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really good at selling seminars. I'd get people to go. I'd get them excited about the Franklin planner. And, you know, initially a Franklin planner cost $6. They now cost $24 just for a resale, you know?
Mm, yeah.
But wow. That's okay because I got to have it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, now, listen, I got to cut you off there. We got to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about basic mistakes and blunders, let's say financial blunders that entrepreneurs make, and how to either prevent that from happening or how do you come back from it when you do. So stand by. We're going to take just a short little break.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called Accelerated Networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And we are back now, Phyllis Smith here with the amazing Hiram Smith. What do you think about my rock and roll crazy show music, Hiram?
Well, I think it's pretty cool. Nobody's going to go to sleep, I'll tell you that.
I want to know, was your foot tapping when you heard that? You can't not move
Absolutely.
To that music. Okay, so one thing I want to just clarify, this might be very basic, and listeners out there might say, you don't know that? I do know it, but most of the time we hear the term bottom line. We don't necessarily hear it the top line. So just give us a quick definition of that, and then we're going to launch into some of the biggest financial blunders that entrepreneurs make.
Okay. Well, you know, the top line, and this is not rocket science, but, you know, people tend to forget how important the top line is. The top line is our gross revenue. You know, this is how much money we brought in this year. And let's say from everything our company did this year, let's say we brought in $10 million in revenue. That's the top line. Well, then the issue is, after we spent everything we had to spend to buy the product, you know, cost of goods sold and all that stuff, and travel, and marketing, and renting our building, and telephones, and all the stuff. After we spent everything we had to spend, we paid all our bills, what's left? That's the bottom line. And if we calculate all of the bills up and we spent $11 million, okay, we got a problem. You know, we say, Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah.
And, because... You know, the fact is, well, where did that extra $1 million come from that we spent above the top line? And the fact is, you had to borrow it. And there are a lot of ways of borrowing it. You know, a lot of people borrow money by not paying their vendors on time. You know, and so I owe a vendor $100,000. Well, it's cheap money. I can borrow, it's like borrowing $100,000 not to pay him back or her back for 90 days. So instead of paying right up front 30 days, I'm going to wait 90 days. So I'm getting $100,000 interest-free for 60 days. That make sense?
Yes,
but
it
the
does.
The fact is, I'm borrowing the money.
Yeah.
And so what happens to a lot of, you know, the entrepreneurs out of the start, they're borrowing money and they don't realize it. And because they're just waiting, they're putting off their bills. They're, you know, I can pay that bill later and this one later, because I'll have more revenue then, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, we are borrowing the money. That's the only, you can't spend money you don't have. And so you create money. And so, you know, the top line, we've got to make sure we know how to drive the top line. Because if we have a product or an idea that isn't going to sell over time, then you've got a problem. And so you've got to be able to prove to yourself that I can continue to grow the top line. And then manage to that by making sure that the bottom line is okay. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, it absolutely
does. That's like 101, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's 101, but I think sometimes people need to hear it again. Because sometimes, don't you think this, you know, somebody, if there's a business entrepreneur having financial issues, sometimes you just have to go back to square one and go back to, you know, business 101 to see what's going on. So there was a recent article I saw in Entrepreneur Magazine. It was called The Six Major Financial Blunders Entrepreneurs Make, and it's written by Brandon Turner. And the first mistake he talks about is entrepreneurs tend to empty their bank accounts, that they are constantly reinvesting and leaving themselves with no cash in the bank. So what are your thoughts on that? How important is it to have cash in the bank?
Well, it's critical. I mean, you've got to have cash for, you know, the unexpected event. I mean, you know, let's go back to our personal management system. If we don't have, you know, the average American, when we say the average American, 98% of the American people at the end of the month have no money in the bank. They're broke. And they have to get their next paycheck before they can start paying bills. That's a terrible way to live, okay?
Yeah.
And so if I could learn personally, you know, if I bring in $4,000 a month, you know, if I could learn to take 10% of that and put it somewhere where I'm not going to touch it unless there's a flood or some natural disaster or some accident, you know, I'm not going to touch that. So I started building up this cash reserve. And the problem is, If on a personal level, people look at their checkbook and say, "Gee, I've got money in my checkbook. I must be able to spend it," you know.
Yeah.
And so they spend it. Well, if you run a company like that, then you run into an emergency. You have no cash. You know, how are you going to cover the emergency? You know, in your personal experience, your refrigerator breaks down. Do you need a refrigerator? Oh yeah, you need a refrigerator. Well, how am I going to get a new refrigerator if I don't have any cash for that rainy day?
Yeah.
So keeping cash on hand is absolutely critical, and most people don't.
At what point then, I mean, you said earlier that your finance guy said, hey, this is, you know, the good news is that you're doubling your revenue every 8 years, you know, every year, but you have 60 million after 8 years.
Yeah.
Then he predicted that you could be earning 120 million, and you're like, oh, that's great. And he said, well, the bad news is that you have no choice. You have to do that because you're spending money. You know, it's like a faucet. Most people, I mean, when people start a business, they have to invest in their business. So, but yet you also have to manage your cash flow. So my question to you then is, when do we know to invest in our business? I mean, how much and when? Is there sort of a magic number? I'm sure you can't be that general about it, but is there something that an entrepreneur can think about before they start in reinvesting in their business?
Yeah, well, let me back up just a minute. There's one natural law of the universe that if anybody has a need for a tattoo, this I would recommend they tattoo on their right thigh, and this is the tattoo. You know, wisdom is knowledge rightly applied. That's the definition of wisdom. Okay, wisdom is knowledge rightly applied. You know, when my son was 4 years old, we were in the kitchen together, I said, Joseph, when the stove is hot, it burns. Don't touch it. You'll get hurt. I gave him knowledge. Now, what do you think he did the minute I left the kitchen?
He touched the stove.
Okay. Yeah, he now has wisdom on the tips of all four fingers of his right hand. Okay.
Yeah.
he had to test it, you know.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of our lives acquiring knowledge, and it never translates into wisdom because we don't do anything with it. We just suggested that it's a good idea to have cash on hand. Mm. Well, why wouldn't I then keep cash on hand?
Right.
Knowledge tells me I should. Wisdom is tells me whether I did that or not. And mm-hmm. so the whole issue of, you know, when do I invest in my company? You know, one of the major reasons, one of the biggest reasons for a young company going down is that they're undercapitalized. They don't have enough money, okay? They don't have enough cash to get to the next level. Well, why not? Because they spent too much money getting to the level they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and if I have an idea, let's go back to what, you know, when we're in the garage and we have this idea for the Franklin Planner and, you know, to do seminars and all of that, we had to estimate, and I remember that these were some interesting times, we had to estimate, well, how much revenue do we think we can generate from the sale of seminars, and how much revenue do we think we can generate from the sale of this Franklin Planner that we think is going to change people's lives? You know, what do we think? And we had to come up with a number. Well, we think, and I don't remember what the numbers were now, but almost 4 years ago, but we think we can, let's say we think we can generate $500,000 in our first year. Okay. Well, if we think we can generate $500,000 in revenue, what is it going to cost us to do that?
Mm.
And so now we got to figure out, well, we got to rent a place, we've got to buy telephones, you know, we've got to have the letterhead, we've got to have a fax machine, a copy machine, you know, whatever it is. And let's say we came up, well, we think it's going to cost us $300,000 to bring in that $500,000 in revenue. Now, where does that $300,000 come from? That's where you've got to go to your bank, your angel, your banker, your dad and mom, or your neighbor, and say, listen, I got this great idea. I think it'll generate $500,000 in revenue. It's going to cost me $300,000 to get there. Will you invest $300,000 in my idea?
Mm.
Now, here's where the big mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make. Their neighbor, friend, or banker says, you know what? I can't give you $300,000, but I'll give you $200,000. And you think, oh, man, I get $200,000. Let's go. We're ready. And so you launch a $500,000 business that's going to cost you $300,000 to implement or execute, but you only have $200,000. You've just started out to fail. You just put yourself on a road to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so my counsel to the young entrepreneur is, don't start that $500,000 business until you have that $300,000 in the bank.
Mm.
And you know, if you're going to borrow it, if you're going to get it from an angel, if your dad's going to give it to you, loan it to you, you know, whatever. Whatever you think it's going to cost that first year, you better have that money in the bank. Borrowed or whatever. And we can talk about, you know, where you get money to start a company. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But underfinanced ideas die 90% of the time.
Yeah. Another mistake, spending money without an ROI in mind, return on investment. The author of the article, Brandon Turner, says entrepreneurs shouldn't chase after vanity or branding unless you can quantify it somehow. It's kind of what you're saying. He says it doesn't have to have a positive ROI, but that's why you test. It at least has to have potential. How do you know when an investment has potential? I know these are like, that's kind of a conceptual question, but, you know, how do you know you got a good idea? And
well,
it's
you
worth,
know,
it's worth
you,
it.
That's it. That's a good question, and this is where the risk factor comes in. But, you know, you don't know. We didn't know if anybody would buy a Franklin Planner until somebody bought one. Okay.
Right,
and so,
yeah.
You know, and when somebody, for example, at the end of the first year, you know, we sold Franklin Planners. Well, the Franklin Planner is a perishable item. You know, it's like an orange, it rots. You know, they buy a planner and it gets old every day. It ages. And so at the end of the year, we didn't really know we had a business until people started calling up wanting to buy next year's planner. That make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how excited we were when people actually started calling up and saying, hey, where do I get my planner for next year?
Brilliant.
Thought, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We got a business. You know, people want it for next year.
Uh-huh.
So now we have a business. But the fact is, you don't know until somebody actually buys it. So that's why the word frugality has got to be king in the first several years. I mean, it always has to be king, but in the first several years, you've got to not spend money on anything until unless you know that's going to generate some income. Here's a big mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make. They get their investment capital. Let's say they get the whole $300,000. And so, hey, I can launch. I don't. So the first thing they do is they go spend $20,000 on office furniture. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, office furniture? How much revenue does office furniture bring in?
Yeah.
Zero. Okay? And
right.
So we didn't come out of my basement here in Utah for 3 years. You know, we didn't buy cars. We didn't buy fancy. You know, we didn't have. We literally did it as we could afford to do it. I've always believed personally, if you can't pay cash for something, you can't afford it.
Mm.
And you know, I've never bought a car on time. The only thing I've ever had to pay on time is a home, because I couldn't afford a home in the early days. But I tell young people, excuse my voice, but I tell young people, you know what? I don't care how good it was at home. You had a flat screen TV. Your parents had two cars. And you know, all that cool stuff. But you know what? You don't have the right to have that stuff until you can pay cash for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to wait until you can pay cash for something, you'll run a great business. And here's another word that people ought to tattoo to their left thigh, okay? And I'm not into tattoos, but you know what I'm saying. And what's the word? It's delayed gratification. Delayed gratification. Boy, if there's anything I could tattoo on my kid's legs, it's that word. Those two words. Delayed gratification. Now, what does that mean?
But I'm going to stop you there.
Oh.
You're going to explain when we come back. We have a short break, and we're going to also talk about frugality, but there also this author contends you can be too frugal in some areas, and that could be a mistake that entrepreneurs make. So stand by. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Steve Kidd, the host of Thriving Entrepreneur. You can listen to us Tuesdays, noon Eastern, on the EWN Radio Network. I want you to know you are uniquely brilliant, created for a purpose. The world needs you, and we want to help. Listen to me and my guest Tuesdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the EWN Radio Network as we help you learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.
Welcome back. What a great conversation I'm having with Hiram Smith. Hiram Smith is an entrepreneur, businessman, extraordinaire, great guy, mentor, just brilliant person. So I'm so honored and thankful to have you here talking to our listeners about how to manage finances in their business so that they can stay afloat. And not just that, not just with their head just above water, but actually, you know, swimming and having a good time, right?
Absolutely.
So you had, before we went to the break, you were talking about delayed gratification. That's what we're supposed to tattoo on our left thigh. So
absolutely.
Explain why that's important.
Well, that's important because most people aren't very good at that. I mean, you know, people part with their money when they get emotionally involved in the need to part with their money. That's why you don't buy lunch at 9:30 in the morning. You're not hungry. But at 11:30 or 12, you start getting hungry. At 1 o'clock, you're emotionally involved, and you go pay $7 for that dang cup of coffee we talked about, okay?
Right.
Or a $20 hamburger, whatever it is. So under, that's a basic principle. When we get emotionally involved, we part with our money. Now, you go into a men's store or a women's store, clothing store, and what do you see everywhere? Mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, mirrors. Why mirrors? Because you go in and put that new dress on or that suit on, and the salesperson puts you in front of a three-way mirror, and, oh, man, do you look fabulous in that? And, oh, man, I wasn't going to spend $500 on a suit, but I got to have this thing because I look great in it. And delayed gratification means, you know what, spending $500 for a suit right now and I'm trying to find a business, start a business, makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Delayed gratification means you don't buy the suit. And I was talking to a bunch of young people about 3 weeks ago, and I was trying to teach them this concept, and I said, let me tell you really what this means. I said, I own a car. It's a Mercedes-Benz. It costs $180,000, most beautiful car I have ever seen. And it's my car, and I love this car. And I said, I keep it at a friend's place up in Salt Lake City. His name is Bob Garth. And Bob Garth owns the Mercedes-Benz dealership. I keep it there, and I go up every month, and I visit my car. And I sit in the front seat, and I smell the leather, and he lets me drive it around the block. And, oh, this is so cool. I get a picture. And I take the picture home, and I show it to all my friends, and they, oh, man, Hiram's got $180,000 Mercedes-Benz. How cool is that? You know what? I will probably never buy that car because my Honda works fine, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the key. And so a lot of people can't do it. They cannot delay the gratification. I got to have it right now.
Well, one of the we were talking about being frugal, and you say it's important that's being frugal. The cars, the furniture that you need for your office,
Absolutely.
Those are things that are not necessarily going to make you money down the road. But there is also one mistake that the author of this article in Entrepreneur Magazine, Brandon Turner, says, that being too frugal, this doesn't have to do with investment or cash flow. It's about spending on products and services that simplify your business life, make you more efficient, and that can help you grow your bottom line. He's saying
right.
If you hold back on that, if you're too frugal in that area, then that could be a problem and a mistake that entrepreneurs make. Now, today, there's a whole lot of software out there now that gives business owners the ability to efficiently run and market their business. So, from your standpoint, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, is that spending money on software and things that can make your that can help you and help you earn money, so to speak, when you're sleeping? You know, where like Infusionsoft or companies like that will help, you know, send out emails and software that helps manage your money. That's not the kind of thing you want to be frugal about. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely, and he's absolutely right on there. But the issue is, if we are being appropriately frugal everywhere else, okay, we're buying Hondas instead of Mercedes, then when it comes time, you know, we realize, you know what, in fact, we went through this at Franklin. We had our first order entry system was a yellow pad and a telephone, okay, and people would call up and say, I want a plan. I say, how many do you want? Four. We write down four on the yellow pad. What's your address? We'd write their address down. And we're excited. We just got an order. Well, when we went public, we had 700 full-time people on the phone with a very sophisticated online entry system where people could just via the internet or call in, they could order with lightning speed. And so we sped up and made it easier for people to buy our product. That order entry system, which turned out at the time to be the most sophisticated order entry system in the state of Utah, cost us $6 million.
Mm.
Okay, now, did we need to spend that $6 million? You absolutely we did, because that enabled us to put our sales into the stratosphere, because it was so easy for people to do business with us. If we had stayed with the yellow pad, the pencil, and the phone, we'd still be there.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right, right.
And so, you know, absolutely, there are crossroads that we come to in the growth of the history of any company where you've got to decide, do I need these systems? Do I need this person? You know, people is a big one. You know, quite often we get in trouble because we've hired too many people that don't do anything that are helping build the top line, you know?
Mm.
And so that's where the skill set of the management comes into play. Because, you know, if you don't have the skill set to take your, you know, you got us $1 million, but if you don't have the skill set to take you to $20 million, you better bring somebody in that has that skill set.
Yeah, and I think the reverse could be true in terms of personnel. You can hire too many and you can hire too little.
Yep, yep.
Right?
Yep, absolutely. And it's a very fine line. And,
yeah.
You know, there's no magic pill. I mean, you do it by trial and error. In fact, there's a great story of this very successful billionaire, and he was being interviewed, and this interviewer said, you know, to what do you attribute your success? And he said, well, we made a lot of good decisions. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, how did you make good decisions? We made a lot of bad decisions.
<You know? laughs> Yeah, yeah.
And so we learn by sad experience. Sometimes the only way to learn is to make the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
But when we've made the wrong choice, to be able to sit back and say, you know what? What we just did was really stupid. We're not going to do that again. What happens to a lot of people, they keep repeating the same stupid mistake.
Yeah, and that's where the mistakes are good. Earlier on, I was saying, there, you know, we all make mistakes. We have to make a mistake. That's how we learn. That's how we grow, and this is what you're saying. But there are some that can be prevented, particularly when it comes to your finances. So moving on to mistake number four, disorganized. This is right up your alley, and we've already been kind of talking about it. Disorganization that leads to extra expenses, and in corporate circles, you are considered the father of time management. I said, and earlier when I was writing this and thinking, I called you the godfather, and I thought, well, I don't know, you know, if you'd want to be called godfather of time management. Anyway,
we can't refuse.
Right. I mean, that's what the Franklin Planner really is. But what are some basic time management tips that people can implement today, right after the show? And how is this related to preventing financial mistakes?
Okay, this is simple. This is not rocket science. But if there is anything I could get the people listening to this show to do, if I could get them to and actually do 10 to 15 minutes every single day formally planning your day. That's isolated from the world. This is not shower time. This is not jogging time. This is not commute time. This is isolated time where I'm by myself. It can be late at night, early in the morning, doesn't matter when. I take 10 to 15 minutes, and I decide what I'm going to accomplish today. Now, that sounds so simple, it's almost offensive, but 87% of the business people, men and women in this country, do not do that.
Mm.
They do not take the time to plan the day. If you don't take time to plan your day, you're going to live in the reactive mode, not the proactive mode, okay? You're going to get to the office and the email says you've got mail, and you get sucked into your computer, and 7 hours later you're still fooling around that computer and you didn't do a thing that was going to advance your company that you decided in your planning time mattered to you.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean you don't have to respond to emails and all the interruptions that come. We have to respond to those. But if somebody comes into your office, and you understand what an interruption is. An interruption is when somebody comes into your office under the mistaken belief that you care. and the issue is, how do you get that person out of your office? Okay, so you can stay focused on what matters most to you. I asked a bunch of engineers one time at Hewlett Packard, said, how do you get somebody out of your office when you want to stay focused on what matters most to you? This engineer jumped up and said, throw up on your desk. I said, well, that's probably effective. But, you know, the issue is, how much do I value my time? Now, you get me started on time, we'll be here for another 2 hours. But understand that there are two fallacies of time that people get hooked into believing. One is they think they're going to get more of it. And the second is they think they can save it somehow. Neither one of those are true. We're all given a check for 24 hours every single day. We have to spend every second. We're not going to get any more. We can't save any. That means, and this is, let me tell you, Phyllis, this is vital. When you hear someone say, I don't have time, you are hearing the biggest lie on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The lie. What they're really saying, when I say, for example, if you said, hi, would you have dinner with me tonight? I say, Phyllis, I'd love to do that, but I don't have time. I'm lying to you. What I'm really saying to you is I value something else more.
Mm.
I value doing something else more. And the minute you realize that, so when Dad comes home and his 10-year-old son says, Dad, play catch with me, and Dad says, I don't have time, son. What he's really saying to that kid is, I value reading the newspaper more than playing catch with you. Have you got that, kid? Now, don't bug me.
Mm.
Now, that's a little harsh,
mm-hmm.
but understand we all have the same amount of time. You and I have the same amount of time Warren Buffett has.
Yeah.
Which really chaps me, because it seems like he has a lot more time than I have. But, so the issue is, how do I spend my time? And this is where opportunity cost comes in. This is right back in the financial area.
Yeah.
You know, if I gave you $10,000 and said, spend it in the next 2 hours or you lose it, so you decide, I'm going to spend $10,000 on a car. I can do that fast. The minute you decided to spend the $10,000 on a car, by virtue of that decision, what did you decide not to spend the money on?
Mm.
Everything else.
Yeah.
So the opportunity cost of the car is what I could have spent the money on. Time is identical, Phyllis. The minute I decide to spend 1 hour watching TV, I just decided not to spend that hour on everything else I could have done.
Great point. Yes.
Now, let me tell you, if people could get that in their brain,
mm-hmm.
so the minute I decide, by the way, the average business person in America spends 3 hours and 48 minutes watching TV every day. Mm. Every day.
Yeah.
Think what they could do with that 3 hours and 48 minutes if they didn't watch TV.
Yeah. There's a woman that I was interviewing yesterday, actually, for Success Institute, which is something you've been on that. It's an eWomen network service that we provide, whereas webinars with experts and thought leaders like yourself. She is a business coach, and one of the things she said is similar to what you're saying, but she also said, when you walk into your office, I love the planning thing, but when you're planning, what is the most important thing you need to do, and that's the first thing that you should do. Need to do for
right.
your business, to move your business forward. And when you start saying, oh, well, I'll answer that email, is that the most important thing that's going to move your business forward? Like you say, you get sucked in to all the, you know, the other emails and then the social media. And there's so many things to distract us. I think it's even harder now to stay organized. But I love that. Well, just, you know, yeah, go ahead.
But see, that's the issue. If I have not taking the time to sit down and plan my day where I decide what's most important for my business that day, then when the interruption or the unexpected happens, I've got something to compare it to. Are you with me?
Yes.
And so when the planning time is like building a shield. And when you go into battle, you know, you hold your shield up, and your shield is your plan for the day. Now, clearly, there's going to be things that you're going to have to react to, because there may be something happen that you didn't expect that will, in fact, be the most important thing you could possibly do today for your business.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hadn't taken the time to plan your day, you won't be comparing it to anything.
Right.
So if I compare my plan to an interruption, then I can decide, well, really, and this takes about 5 nanoseconds, is this interruption more important than what I said mattered most to me today. And so you're making judgments all day. If you don't have the plan, there's nothing to compare it to, so you're reactive. You're doing what everybody else thinks you ought to do when you ought to do it. You're out of control. And you know what? You got somebody working for you like that, get rid of them.
Right.
Find somebody else.
Yeah. We got to, I was going to take another break here, but we're just going to keep on going. We could go on for hours on this. Mistake number five, I'm not sure if this is something that we need to go in too much detail. I think that you better sit with an accountant. But one of the mistakes that Brandon Turner talks about in his article is that entrepreneurs tend to expense everything at tax time. The bottom line is not everything is a tax write-off, especially if it's not essential to your company. So I'm sure you had CFOs, you said that earlier, you had your finance people, all handling all that stuff for you, and you looked over to the bottom right to see, am I good or am I not? Am I making money or not? But can you offer any advice for entrepreneurs that will help them stay on top of what is and what isn't a tax write-off?
You know what? Just obey the law. That's the simplest thing I could say. Obey the law. People, they like to get cute and they say, I'm not evading taxes, I'm avoiding taxes. And, there is a big difference between evading and avoiding taxes. But sometimes people get pretty cute and make that line very, very thin. And you don't want an IRS agent deciding that what you decided was an expense really wasn't an expense. Because then you're going to spend $15,000 on an audit that is a waste of, horrible waste of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, my kids used to ask me, Dad, how often can I wear a shirt before it's dirty? And my answer is, if there's doubt, it's dirty.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And if there's doubt about an expense, whether it's a valid business expense or not, don't call it an expense.
Yeah. My husband, along those lines, when there's something in the fridge that kind of looks funky, my husband will say, when in doubt, throw it out.
Absolutely. that little green stuff going on the outside, that's probably not good for you,
Yeah, I know, right. So, and here we are moving on to mistake number six. I'm sure there's many more, but I think that this is a pretty good start, don't you think, that we're addressing here, just kind of the basics for being in business. And if you've scaled your business and you've been in business for a while, it doesn't hurt to go back and look at these things. So mistake number six, not knowing when to quit. I think this is quite interesting. When someone starts a company, it's usually because they believe there's a market for their product or service, right? Most likely they're passionate about what they're selling. But sometimes, no matter how hard they try, what they thought was hot is not. So yet they keep trying and pouring more money into their business. So my question to you is, and you have more businesses than Franklin Quest and Franklin Covey. I know you have others. When is it time to call it quits?
Well, the best time is when people stop buying your product. before they stop buying your product. And the fact is, there are all kinds of red flags that start to go up that tell you that your business is in trouble. I'll give you a classic example. I'll never forget the day when 3Com came into my office and the guy put the first Palm Pilot on my desk. He said, we created the Franklin Planner. There were no iPhones, no iPads, no iPods, there weren't cell phones, there weren't PCs, And so the Planner was a pretty exciting thing. Well, they put a Palm Pilot on my desk. And the guy said, this is going to revolutionize how people manage their day. And I picked that thing up, and I played with it, and I turned it on, and I tried to read the screen, and I said, and I quote, this is pretty cool, but no one will ever buy one. I turned out to be wrong about that, by the way.
Yeah. Yep.
And, we ended up selling 10,000 Palm Pilots a week through our retail stores.
Wow.
And what we discovered, our message in the early days was have everything in one place. And that one place was your Franklin Planner. Mm-hmm. All we had to do was change one word in our message, have everything in one system. So now it might be my Franklin Planner, it might be my iPhone PC, it might be a combination of all of those, doesn't matter. The basic principles of time management and self-management, money management, they haven't changed for 6,000 years, Phyllis. Now, the only thing that's changing is the tools with which we implement those principles. And so, you know what? If I've got a tool that is being outdated and replaced by technology, I'd better be the first one to know it, and I either embrace the new technology and sell that, or I get out of business, shut it down. This is not rocket science.
Okay, well, listen, we're about to, the show's about to end, and I'm going to, I missed talking with you. You know, you were at eWomen Network Conference a couple of years ago, and we've become closer acquaintances over time.
Absolutely.
And I've
You're
been
a good
so
friend, Phyllis.
Yeah, I feel that way too. But to sum up, what I'd like is if you could sum up what the most. I mean, you've said several, you know, through the show, you've brought up several really important things. But what is one thing, the most important factor every entrepreneur should know to prevent a major financial disaster? What would that be?
Be willing to recognize that you need counsel from people that know more about finances than you do. I guess the word we wrapped up in a simple word is humility. You know, you've got to be humble enough. You've got to be humble enough to recognize, acknowledge, admit that you're not smarter than everybody else. And if you're willing to admit that, then you'll listen. Most entrepreneurs, I don't know, that's probably not, that may not be true, but a lot of entrepreneurs just don't listen to anybody. You know, that because they're so passionate about their product, their idea, their gizmo, whatever it is, that they don't listen to people that might have some really good counsel for them. So I would say, you know, be humble. Listen. If you're willing to listen, then you'll avoid all kinds of mistakes.
Yeah, and you know, Sandra Yancey says, the founder and CEO of eWomen Network, says hire people smarter than you, and that's basically what you're saying too. It's not even just in finance. It's you know, you steer the ship, but you got to have the people who are going to help the ship stay afloat, and you know, and keep it in good shape. So, You are a rocket scientist. I love talking with you, and I do hope that we get to spend some more time together in the future. So
yeah,
thank you again.
That. Great to talk to you, Phyllis. Take care.
You too. Thanks for joining us.